guys, he ain't going nowhere. That's great for fan talk. Oh, and the WCW days, yeah, you could see that. He's not going to, the only place for him to go is AEW. So he's going to ride WWE out till he retires.
I don't want to gloss over one particular moment, though. And SP3 was, talked about the interference after the Usos kind of being just that love letter to WrestleMania's history. How cool was it having Rock and Cena in the middle of the ring one more time, 11 years after The Rock's last advertised match, just kind of be staring there? Like, it made sense for Cena to go after Solo after what we saw in, I believe, Saudi Arabia last year. But then to have The Rock come down and we just get that moment, just that
the
moment.
Rock dropping F-bombs. He was dropping as, who's this guy out here? Like, he was going off. I loved every moment of it. I was like, thrice in a lifetime on our watch along over on True Hill Heat. That was a great time. That was much fun. That was that was overbooked to a T, but it was everything that we wanted. And then the 20 minutes before the interference was really good matchup between Roman and Cody. They kept it entertaining, even though we knew that the interference was going to come.
Yeah, the second that Jimmy Uso got in the ring, I turned over to the guy next to me in the press box. I was like, okay, the match has officially started.
Yes.
No, I called 21 minutes. I had a pull on our watch along. I was like, 21 minutes. That's when the first interference. And I called it to a T. 21:07. That's the first interference.
I was wondering when they were going to get to it.
Yeah.
I was saying more like 24. But that's about the time to get into it anyway. Yeah. Anywhere in that range.
The thing I love most about the match, though, is like the focus on the fact that anytime Cody Rhodes goes for the triple crossroads, something always f***s him up between 2 and 3. And every single time, that's like when the interference came out. It's when the interference came out. And then finally, after, who was the last one I got to? After Taker chokeslammed The Rock and they both disappeared and it was finally one-on-one. And he's just savoring every moment when he's like, finally, no one is going to f*** with me between 2 and 3 here. And he hits that last crossroads and it was over.
I want to say that, you know, the interference was all fun and dandy, but the best story beat of the matchup is Seth Rollins coming out in the Shield gear. And I'm sorry, Seth, we're going to get to your matchup as well. You were the biggest loser of this whole weekend. You were right in the end, because his promo was, I will be your Shield, Cody. And the Shield costume, the Shield gear, gave Roman PTSD that he had to get revenge for something that happened a decade ago. The origin of this Roman Reigns tribal chief character started with the Shield betrayal, the first betrayal of his career, and he could not even just finish the job on Cody. He had to hit Seth with the chair, and that's what cost him. That was brilliant.
In the perfect,
that is the perfect spot. That was the perfect ending to the best title reign I have seen in WWE history.
I just love like Seth coming down in the Shield gear, and literally like the first thing as he gets into the ring, he just gets his ass whooped. Like immediately, he gets drive-by'd and he gets knocked out, Superman punched, whatever it was.
Yeah, he got Superman punched.
And I'm just sitting there and I'm like,
coming in, you have a weapon, Seth.
He's like sliding into the ring, like trying to be all sneaky. And Rock's just sitting here like, surely he's not coming from behind me. And then, Roman takes him out. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, boy, Seth has had a rough weekend.
Yeah,
and then he gets
good.
Hit with the chair afterwards. And
that was really good.
But that's the story I want to see unfold now. Like we always talk about the question you always ask, SP3. Okay, great. Cody's won. Now what? The fact that Rollins now has to reconcile with the fact that he risked everything to help a former rival, his nemesis, a guy that he hated when he returned to WWE, and Cody leaves with everything, Dutch, and now Rollins comes into Raw with absolutely nothing but a bum knee. Oh, that's something that's going to be fun to watch play out.
Well, I'm interested in the story now more than I was. because I think they have rejuvenated the sport of wrestling, pro wrestling, to such a degree this now it is must watch TV, because they can do one little twink and it makes their TV. And there's no other TV. I mean, WWE hasn't had that in so many years, but now they do. And they got so much talent that they have emphasis on that they can draw from. And if I had to say one thing that was a negative in this pay-per-view was Corey Graves. He damn near killed it for me. I listened to him. I go, God, I turned my TV down. I really did. Thank God.
He's a little bit more acceptable when it's McAfee and Cole next to him.
That's what I'm saying. McAfee, I'm glad he was there. Michael Cole's another one.
McAfee is hilarious. When Michael Cole tried not to curse, and McAfee was like,
"No, he was. He's good. So I would give him. I would let him go. I mean, let's let him talk. But yeah. We got too much of the. I mean, that's nitpicking. I know, but
hey, if you want to hear a nitpick, since we're on the subject of Seth Rollins, if we're making adjustments, we're making tweaks. How about we make tweaks to Seth Rollins? If we're going to present him as a main event act, we need some tweaks of character change and emotions when stuff happens. Because it is a little off-putting that you have the final scene of night one is a dejected Seth and Cody after they lose. And then this man comes out on the next night on a clown parade. And literally CM Punk could not even take him seriously on commentary. CM Punk's like, this guy's coming dressed up as a clown. What do you want me to say? Like, yo, I was like, damn. I was like, yes, I agree. I was like, I haven't agreed with you much this week, Punk, but I agree with you here.
Like, it was a sight to behold, like where we were sitting watching all of the shiny things, like a Mardi Gras parade just come down. And I'm just sitting here and I'm like, what was Seth's pitch for this? Like, hey, guys. All right, so Adam Rose, but
exactly
ramped up to 9 million. Like, was that the pitch? Like, I didn't think it was a bad entrance at all. I think it fits who Seth's character has been. Do I think it fit the moment, like SP3 said, coming off of night one? Not necessarily. But he also never really was concerned with Drew McIntyre or this world title match at all, like leading up to this. So it was kind of just like, to me, if I was going to look at it from the other side, it's just Seth playing his normal mind games of, this is going to be an easy night's work for me, because I have never been that concerned with Drew McIntyre leading up to this match at all. And then those guys went out there and put on an absolute freaking clinic. Now, I don't like Seth kicking out of like 9 claymores and Drew kicking out of like 5 stomps, but hey,
I wouldn't say it was a clinic. I think the best way to describe it to the people out there, if you didn't watch the matchup, imagine a Brock Lesnar matchup, and that's what it was. Yeah. It was finishers and suplexes.
It was fun. That's what it was. It was a lot of fun.
It was great. Yeah, it was the best version of a Brock Lesnar match, which is always very fun. A really good way to open up the show. I wouldn't describe it as a clinic. Clinic is Bryan Danielson versus Zack Sabre Jr. to me.
Is that the word I used?
Yeah,
I'm plenty. Tired. I'm tired, dog. Like, don't. Don't take everything I say like with a grain of salt. I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted.
You know I gotta call you out on it for the people.
Rick, when are you going home?
I'm staying for Raw after Mania tonight, and then I'll leave whenever the hell my happy ass wakes up tomorrow morning. But I will say, what was a clinic was the storytelling and the booking after the match ended, because Drew McIntyre wins the World Heavyweight Championship. He's finally holding it. He's getting his moment, right? He's finally won a championship in front of people. This is what he has been trying to accomplish for years, something that he has felt screwed out of, something, frankly, that he has earned with his great character work over the last few months. He has that great exchange with Seth as Seth is walking up the ramp where he goes, you do f-ing deserve this. And he goes over and he has that great moment with his wife. And it's like, this is perfect. End of segment. Let's fade to black, move on to the next match. And then Drew just had to turn over to Punk at the commentary table and stare him down. And then he had to go over there. And I'm sorry, I got to pull the Cat Williams. You shouldn't have been talking shit. He's getting up right there in his face. And Punk just finally decides, hey, look, this shit. Sweeps his legs out from under him, rips off the arm brace. Punk gets his big pop, even though, and his big moment, even though he wasn't healthy enough for the match. He hits him with the brace, and then boom, the music hit. And I could not be happier for Damian Priest because the entire stadium lost their damn minds. He comes down, he hits McIntyre with the briefcase, throws him in the ring, gives him the big sit down choke slam, pins him. Crowd loses their mind. And for the first time in 50 years, there is a man of Puerto Rican descent who is holding on to a world championship right now. All of that was booked great. Drew gets his moment. Punk gets his moment. Damian gets his moment. He gets to prove a lot of people wrong who thought that he was an idiot and would not cash in that successfully, or when he did, nobody would give a f-. It was all brilliantly done, in my opinion.
This was a great job by the booking with, you know, finishing off the Drew chase of the world championship and him finishing his feud with Seth, then continuing his feud with CM Punk. And both characters fit to a T. Drew became too obsessed. He became everything he was calling Seth. Seth was too distracted with everything else throughout the match. Drew was distracted with Punk doing the go to sleep and stuff like that. Jad Punk. And then at the end, he couldn't even have his moment and walk away. He had to rub it in Punk's face. And then Punk's character to a T. You say something, he might choke you or trip you or punch you in the face. So he does that, picks up his arm brace, hits him in the head. He gets a moment at WrestleMania. And then you have Damian Priest, the rise of Damian Priest. Great cash in, him hitting him in the head, getting the cash in, and then Judgment Day having their moment with both world championships of Monday Night Raw. That was a great thing to happen. I thought this was very well booked after a very good opener to the show. So yeah, this accomplished a lot of things. So I got to hand it to them for it.
Well, it's very rare that you see like four different units, four different talents. Oh, get kind of pushed in the same segment, even though by losing. But that put the spotlight on Drew McIntyre. Did they show a shot of him where he was sitting, he's dejected, he had this happy, happy moment, and all of a sudden it's just all taken away from him? Did they show a
yeah, yeah, they showed him, and he wasn't even focused on Damian again. He was looking at Punk after he lost.
By the way, can we shout out this man, like proving why he won Social Superstar of the Year, tweeting out LOL, bored at work during the match, and then after the match just quote tweeting that with one word? Like, this man's character work. I hope he's re-signed, and that's one of the things that kind of leaves a lot of question marks with, okay, he wins the world title, you're thinking, oh, well, clearly he's going to be sticking around. His contract reportedly is up shortly after WrestleMania. But with Damian Priest cashing in, it does leave that question mark. But man, the seeds that they have sown here with this Punk thing, like, if he doesn't re-sign, they're never going to be able to pay him off.
Yeah. He ain't going nowhere. That's great for fan talk. Oh, and the WCW days, yeah. You could see that. He's not going to. The only place for him to go is AEW. So he's going to ride WWE out till he retires. And I don't blame him.
If you're asking me what I think he's going to do, I think he's going to probably re-sign with WWE. I'm probably like 75% sure. But if you're asking me what I think he should do, he should let his contract expire and hear what AEW says. I think that that's the best decision for a lot of different guys in WWE, because regardless of, you know, how great he's doing in WWE right now, there's only one number one spot, and that's Cody's now. So if you can accept that you're not going to be that number one, or you'll be battling for number two, or be battling with the number one to draw some money at the top of the card, you can be okay with that, then yeah, re-sign with WWE, you get the big paycheck, but a lot of times you don't even know what AEW is offering because you only listen to WWE. So I think that the best decision for him in his career is to listen to both sides.
Yeah,
and play both sides against each other.
Sure, absolutely. And that's what anybody should do in any profession, is to see what's out there and make the best deal for you. Now, having spoken to Drew several times in the past, I know for him, you know, the most important thing is creative satisfaction. As long as the story is good in his mind. Now, his view may have changed since the last time I spoke to him, but he's always been a guy to preach, if the story's good, if I'm having fun, if I'm enjoying what I'm doing, I'm a happy guy. So with what he's doing right now, I think WWE is satisfying all of those needs for him on a creative basis. So I don't know if necessarily he wants to, you know, go in and be a top guy.
When is his contract up? Satisfied.
A couple weeks.
When is his contract up?
A couple weeks, a couple days. We don't know. Shortly after WrestleMania.
If his contract was up in a couple weeks and they had any inclination that he wasn't going to resign, they would have never done the thing with Punk. They'd have probably done the switchover, but Punk, they'd have totally left him out, I think. But now he's got to go through.
I think he at least signed an extension through Glasgow.
Yeah, that's the other big thing. Like, you're not going to have him a major pay-per-view, and honestly, he should win the world title there. Like, and that's one of the things that I like about this is, until Punk is healthy, obviously he's healthy enough to get physical, but like, until he's ready to have a match again, you can have Damian and Drew fight over the world title over the summer and then build to Punk and Drew at SummerSlam if that's the direction that you want to go. So they have that storyline already built in and ready to go. And, you know, I can see a lot of the different storylines that they have set up. Liv Morgan seems to be tailor-made, ready for Rhea Ripley now that she's past Becky Lynch. Going to be interesting to see what happens with the women's division on SmackDown now that Bayley is the WWE Women's Champion. But, I mean, they got, like, do you continue the feud with Damage Control, or do you, like, give somebody else, like a Tiffany Stratton or a Jade Cargill? Speaking of which, what'd you guys think of that trio this weekend and their match that they had with Damage Control on Saturday night and Jade Cargill's big moment?
Dutch?
I'm waiting on Sid. I'm gonna see what Sid says first.
I mean, it was fine. It was 8 minutes. It was just a showcase for Jade. The entrance was amazing. Yeah. The entrance was like they were doing a Super Bowl halftime show, and they looked amazing with each other. But the match was nothing to write home about. It wasn't the worst match of the weekend. Tip your hats to Jay and Jimmy for the worst brother versus brother match in WrestleMania history.
I think the expectations were too high for that match anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What they did, they run across the ripening point when they should have had it. But now it's a month or so past that. And now they're trying to have the match, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
Temperature in the room, and the room, they told everybody, well, hey guys, you ran past your expiration date, and the people let them know.
Yeah. Like it was perfect. It was exactly what we said it was going to be for 8 months. 8 months they told a nonsensical bad story. And then they tried to clean it up with a video package that wasn't what the story was, but it was a great video package. And then they gave them the second least amount of minutes of any match during WrestleMania weekend, ladies and gentlemen.
They may have known something.
And when you listen to that crowd, Jey Uso is over. Jimmy Uso got light boobs. It was basically what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Exactly. When was the last time Jimmy Uso won a match?
Never. He beat Carl Anderson in October of 2023. That was the last time. They had no relevant single. I have a whole tweet of they checked the boxes on every single way to screw these guys over. It was through no fault of Jimmy and Jey Uso of why they had the worst match at WrestleMania weekend. It was all of the booking leading up to it, and then the fact that they gave them 11 minutes and it had no drama, no heat. the only time people really got vocally involved in it was to boo Jay, because the match basically ended with Jimmy's a loser, Jay's an idiot who thought his brother was good, whose brother thought his brother was saying sorry during the middle of a freaking WrestleMania match.